This is an Animal Planet podcast. Check out Discovery Network's complete podcast lineup at discoverychannelradio.com.
These families really need a break, but no ordinary vacation will do. They've got to get back to nature together as a family, and we've got the answer. It's time to escape the daily grind and search for some wildlife in the great outdoors. It's time to get out there. Meet the Clausen family of Chicago, Illinois. Craig and Laurie and three high-energy kids. Katie is the oldest, followed by middle sister Melissa and little brother Jack. And don't forget Abby, the overindulged sixth member of the family. Craig works for a textbook company. Laurie is a full-time mom who works frequently as an extra in movies. Last year, their comfortable life was shaken. 8-year-old Jack came down with a terrible pain in his hip, leaving him unable to walk.
And he finally ended up being diagnosed with a tumor in his hip, and it came down to him needing surgery.
The surgery was an experimental procedure, not covered by insurance, a huge financial hit. With medical bills stacked high, the Clausens abandoned any dreams of a family vacation. But we're about to change all that.
Congratulations, Clausen family. You are going to visit Arches National Park and Canyonlands National Park.
Awesome.
They're getting out there to some of the weirdest, wildest country in America. The Clausens leave suburban Chicago behind and head 1,000 miles to Moab, Utah, the gateway to both Arches and Canyonlands National Parks. Most people know these parks for their incredible rock formations, but that's only half the story. Plenty of amazing animals thrive out in the desert, but they're not easy to find. This will definitely be an eye-opening trip. First stop, the Arches National Park Visitor Center.
Hi.
Welcome. We're the Clausens.
Hi.
Craig Clausen.
Welcome to Canyon Country.
Rangers Tony Schetzel and Laura Joss give the Clausens a hint of what's in store.
This is Canyonlands National Park. It's about 330,000 acres of the great American Southwest.
I'd like to show you where you'll be going in Arches National Park. And Arches is 76,000 acres with over 2,000 arches. So enjoy your visit. We're really glad to have you here.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Canyonlands.
Hey, thank you so much.
All right, guys, let's go.
Have a safe trip now.
The Clausens' first destination comes as a complete surprise. Not what you'd expect in a place that gets less than 10 inches of rain a year.
Hello.
Dr. Tim Graham is a desert ecologist for the U.S. Geological Survey. He meets them in a little oasis called Courthouse Wash. On either side of the creek is a wet area, rich in plant life, called the riparian zone. In a desert, this is a rare and special place where wildlife abounds. This one is home to, of all things, a desert amphibian called the tiger salamander.
Let's see if we can find some.
Okay, let's go.
Tiger salamanders are good at hiding in muddy water, under rocks, or burrowed into the damp earth beside the creek. But hide as they might, they're no match for Jack's keen eyes.
Look at him!
That's great, Jack. Good catch.
The Clausens are only able to handle this delicate animal because they're with Tim.
As you can see, their skin is really, and you felt that it's kind of slimy.
Salamanders absorb the water they need directly through their skin. The trade-off is that they lose water the same way whenever they're on land.
Yeah, let's get it wet again.
Ecologists can tell a lot about the health of this ecosystem just by monitoring the salamander population.
Well, the tiger salamander is the only species of salamander we have in Utah. Their habitat is kind of rare, so it is unusual to find them, and we were pretty lucky today.
Tiger salamanders and other amphibians live in two worlds, land and water. If there's any change in the quality of the air, soil, or water, salamanders are going to be affected, more so than animals that live only on land or in water. For that reason, ecologists call them indicator species, because they're the first to indicate environmental problems. So finding a salamander this large and healthy speaks volumes for the overall health of Arches and Canyonlands. Every animal the Clausens will see has had to carve out a niche for itself and adapt to this extreme climate. It's the Clausens' first morning in the desert, and they want to start big. The desert bighorn sheep is uniquely adapted to live here year-round. They're smaller and leaner than their Rocky Mountain cousins, with a light-colored coat to blend into the desert landscape. Disappearing into remote canyons is a bighorn specialty,
pilot Claire Schaefer and biologist Guy Wallace have the advantage of a bird's eye view. Up in the air, it's easy to see all the places a bighorn can hide. Finding a herd of bighorns would be difficult using just your eyes. Some of the sheep have been fitted with radio collars, which emit a signal that is picked up by an antenna mounted on the wing of the airplane. Even though Wallace can't see the sheep, he's pinpointed the area where they're hanging out. So they head back to hook up with the Clausens on the ground.
Well, two of them.
They're here to see bighorns. But it's the spectacular Colorado River scenery that grabs everyone's attention.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
That's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life.
That is incredible.
And sheep blend in so well that the Clausens don't notice them until Guy points them out.
You, and then behind her is the ram.
They're like hiding.
They're adapted to live in this kind of country. They have the padded hooves and strong muscular legs so they can jump over rocks, and they're pretty amazing.
Not only are sheep hooves padded, they're split into two halves that can spread wide for more stability on narrow ledges. Super sharp eyesight helps them with those pinpoint maneuvers. When Canyonlands National Park was established in 1964, there were only 100 sheep here. With park protection, the herd grew and became the foundation of bighorn recovery all across Utah. Now the state claims more than 3,000. Even so, a sighting is never guaranteed in this tricky landscape. After a long hike in the bright Utah sun, Craig and Lori decide to kick back in the comfort of the lodge.
I wonder what they're going to have us doing tomorrow.
But Katie, Melissa, and Jack decide to explore a micro world called potholes. They're just a bit different from the ones back in Chicago. Potholes form when water gets into a small hole in the sandstone. Each time the hole dries out and then refills, it erodes a little bit more. Some potholes can eventually reach more than 60 feet deep. And where there's water, there's life. This microecosystem is so fragile that even the oil from our skin can damage it. Before long, they've caught a range of tiny creatures, including fairy shrimp, beetle larvae, and tadpole shrimp. About half the size of a dime, tadpole shrimp are the easiest to pick up for a closer look.
Yeah, they're arthropods, which are like insects. They have a hard exoskeleton. They're not as soft as a salamander, huh?
Nope.
But what makes these tiny creatures really amazing is how tough they are. The water in these potholes can reach 140 degrees. It can freeze, or it can dry out completely. And these tiny animals survive it all.
The fairy shrimp and tadpole shrimp, they lay eggs in the wet pool, and then the eggs dry out when the pool dries out, but they're still alive. And they can survive for at least decades.
In fact, NASA scientists took a type of fairy shrimp eggs out into space and then brought them back to Earth, where they hatched good as new. When a dry pothole fills with rain, the waiting eggs can hatch in just 30 minutes. And in only 5 days, the shrimp are ready to lay eggs again. Today's lesson? If you're looking to see just how amazing animals can be, sometimes it's best to think small. What could possibly be next? Would you believe a burrowing toad that comes complete with a pair of tiny shovels? And who better to introduce the Clausens to this weird creature than Tim Graham, the expert on all things small and strange? He's brought them back to the riparian area called Courthouse Wash. Well, Tim's technique for catching toads is pretty low tech.
A pitfall trap is a pit. You can just dig a hole, let something fall in it. The plastic fence here is called drift fence, so that any toad or anything is hopping along or walking along and it'll fall in the bucket.
Let's see what we can find.
Let's go. Something moving in there.
These are spadefoot toads, and if you look on the hind feet, then you can see these little black spades. And those are used for them to dig into the ground. So if they'll calm down and you set them on your hand, you can feel them. They're trying to dig into your hand.
Those little spades come in handy, enabling them to dig down to where the sand is moist.
You see how they're kind of puffed up?
Yeah, mine's all puffed up.
Yeah, that's a defensive posture.
Puffing themselves up isn't the toad's only defensive trick. They secrete a special odor to make them unappealing to predators. This is where it starts to get a bit weird.
There's nothing like sniffing toads. Some people say they smell like roasted peanuts. Some people say they smell like caramel corn or raw peanuts.
I'm going to trust you on that one. I've never smelt a toad before.
Oh, gosh, that's weird.
Can I hold it?
There is actually a point to all of this. Like tiger salamanders, spade-footed toads are an indicator species, highly sensitive to pollution and environmental stress. So Tim enlists the Clausens to help him catalog the two toads they've caught. If there's a decline in toad population or sudden change in their health, Tim will know about it and start looking for causes. It's time for the toads and the Clausens to move on.
Yeah.
He says, let me go.
Thanks so
You're
much.
You're welcome. Thanks for helping.
That was really fun.
That afternoon, the Clausens head off on their own to take in majestic Canyonlands National Park. Meanwhile, biologist Mike Bogan and Tony Mulhagen are already busy setting up for a special animal encounter. In a land of rock with millions of crevices and caves, it's no surprise that one animal thrives here, a certain creature of the night. Bats make up 20% of all mammal species. Utah alone has 18 different types of bats. Mike and Tony want to learn more about all these different species. The first step is to catch and catalog as many bats as they can. They use a technique called mist netting. The mesh is so delicate that the bat's finely tuned sonar doesn't always recognize it as an obstacle. Like so many of the local animals, the best place for bat catching is near a small creek. Leafy plants grow where there's water, and insects thrive among the plants, and the bats come to eat the insects. All of Utah's bats are insectivores. When they're preparing for winter, they'll eat their weight in bugs every night. That makes them a real benefit to people. But that doesn't matter to Katie Clausen, who's just found out the subject of tonight's animal adventure.
Oh, I don't feel comfortable doing the whole bat thing. I don't know what it is. I think I'm just scared.
You add into that vampire bat novels and stories and so forth, and pretty soon you have people that get worried.
As darkness descends, so do the bats. And it doesn't take long before the first one finds its way into the net. Nobody's sure they want to get too close. That is, until they see how unscary this little creature is.
You can see how fluffy and soft he is. They're called mouse-eared bats. And Craig, if you'll look at the membrane there that surrounds the tail, can you see those fine hairs?
Fine hairs and fuzz.
Craig, excellent. The fringe on the tail of this bat makes it a fringe-tail myotis or a fringe-tail bat.
While Mike acts as bat ambassador, Tony makes a note of the species, its size, weight, and sex. Eventually, they'll have a detailed profile of the local bat population throughout the year. With the data collected, they let the bat return to its nightly hunt.
There he goes.
And they've already caught a different one.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. This one's called a big-eared bat, and it fits the name to a T.
This is a very uncommon bat in Canyonlands. It's one that we rarely catch in our nets. They actually can roll their ears back into a ram's horn shape.
Those big ears are how bats pick up their own echolocation. Sound waves bouncing back off of trees, rocks, and insect prey. Bat sonar is about 3 times sharper than anything we've invented. And contrary to myth, their night vision beats ours too.
What do you think? Are bats scary?
No, not anymore.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you.
That's great.
Take care.
We're glad you
could come out.
Have a safe trip.
The Clausens are bouncing along a dirt road in the Hurra Pass, right between two national parks, Arches and Canyonlands.
Well, your lucky day. You get to go on a camel ride today.
All right.
This is crazy.
This is Bill. Contrary to popular belief, he doesn't spit, kick, or bite. He's actually real fuzzy and soft.
Camelot Lodge is the brainchild of former Hollywood animal trainer Terry Moore.
When you think of desert, you think of camels. And with 5,000 other people out there doing horseback rides, I thought, nah, I'm going to be different. We're going to do camel treks. And it's a perfect area for camels.
Dromedaries, or one-humped camels, have been used for traversing the deserts of Arabia for more than 4,000 years. Their desert adaptations serve them well in southern Utah. Heavy eyelashes and nostrils that can close keep sand out of their eyes and nose. And then there's the legendary ability to go without water up to 5 days in the dead of summer.
Camels are easily adapt to almost any environment. We have cold winters like most deserts, and the camels develop a thick wool. In the summer, when it's 107 degrees outside, the camels have no ill effects.
Contrary to myth, camels don't store water in their stomachs or their humps. but the humps do store fat. As a last resort, hydrogen in the fat can be used to produce water. Ancient camels lived here as recently as 10,000 years ago, so maybe they're not so out of place after all. As the Clausens find out, they're a great way to get around.
Oh, it's so cool.
What do we see on the road up there? Looks like a snake.
Looks like he's got a checkered pattern on him.
Doesn't look like a rattler.
No. Oh, I see. That's a gopher snake.
Gopher snakes are docile and non-venomous, so it's easy for Terry to catch this one and give the Clausens a close-up look.
I'm just going to hand you up the tail here, and you hold the head in. There you go. Let him just relax in your hand.
Squeezing me.
To a mouse or other small mammal, that powerful squeeze spells big trouble. Death by suffocation. But to a human, it's perfectly harmless. He's only squeezing to make sure he doesn't fall.
All right, let's take him down. We'll put him down here and watch him crawl away. Let's put him right up in this grass here.
Finally, they arrive at their destination, a little maze of caves called Catacomb Rock. As good a place as any for both people and camels to grab a break and recharge. Camels will happily browse on desert shrubs, prickly pear cactus, and apparently granola bars. These sandstone caves are the result of simple erosion, of water flowing through cracks and holes in the rock, and a creature with a nasty reputation is sure to be lurking in the shadows.
It's getting dark. Maybe the scorpions are coming out.
Uh-oh.
Or bats.
More bats.
Stop it.
Luckily for Katie, there aren't any bats in here, but they are standing in the lair of a giant hairy beast.
The giant hairy scorpion. This is a fairly good size one.
Of course, like most creepy crawly creatures, the giant hairy scorpion sounds a lot worse than it is. They're not all that giant or that hairy. But at 6 inches long, they are twice the size of other North American scorpions. And they do have a coating of tiny fine hairs, which can sense vibrations from approaching threats or prey.
So does it have a stinger?
The danger area, they do have a stinger. It's right here on the base of their tail.
Scorpions aren't insects. They're actually related to spiders. And like spiders, they're predators. That tail isn't only for defense. It's how they catch their prey.
They do have pinchers, and they use those like we use our hands. They'll grab a cricket, hold the cricket, and eat it like a hoagie sandwich.
There's one thing for sure about living in a desert. It isn't easy. Animals have had to come up with a fleet of adaptations to beat the heat. The Clausens head into the middle of Arches National Park to find one of the most successful desert dwellers of all. An animal so well adapted, it doesn't even need to drink water. What is it? Not some strange burrowing reptile or nocturnal bug, but a furry little mammal. Tim Graham is back to show them this surprising animal. He set up a dozen of his little bed and breakfast traps the night before. If they've attracted a few customers, the Clausens can help Tim conduct a population survey.
So if there's nothing in it, then tap it to close it.
Okay, everybody search. Keep looking.
Nothing in here.
There it is right there.
It's a little desert specialist called the kangaroo rat. Katie doesn't have to wait long to find out where the kangaroo rat got its name. Easy come, easy go. Not much good for Tim's research, but they're in luck. Tim doesn't take any chances with losing the second one. He's an old hand at keeping these escape artists under control. As a last defense, the little rodent plays possum.
It's like they go into a trance.
It's really
Those big hind legs give them the bounce they need to get away from predators. Special cheek pouches allow them to gather seeds at night and stash them in their burrow. Then they can dine underground out of the heat. But their most unique adaptation is that they don't need to drink at all. Their secret is a specially evolved kidney that retains as much water as possible. The Clausens helped Tim record the kangaroo rat's weight, a good indication of its overall health. The park's kangaroo rats aren't endangered, and by keeping a close watch on the population, they'll stay that way.
Watch your foot. Watch your feet. You don't want to step on loose rocks.
The Clausens couldn't come all this way without checking out the region's star attractions. Arches National Park is smaller than their hometown of Chicago, but it boasts more than 2,000 rock arches, the highest concentration anywhere. What little rainfall there is works away at cracks in the sandstone, eroding the rock into tall slabs called fins. Some of those fins eventually get so thin that they develop a hole. The result?
Those famous arches. Rock stars like Delicate Arch, a Utah state symbol. And Landscape Arch, the longest in the park at over 300 feet. Even in this harsh environment, life turns up in surprising places and surprising ways. Here, even the soil is alive. It's called biological soil crust, a mixture of bacteria, algae, and lichens. The crust controls erosion, holds rainwater, and nourishes the plants that feed the park's wildlife. So the Clausens have to be careful to stay on the trails, because busting the crust is bad for all life in these parks. Right in the center of Arches National Park, the Clausens find their favorite spot, a cluster of arches called the Windows.
It's just been absolutely amazing. I had no idea this was even here, and I just can't believe it.
The Clausens' adventures aren't over yet. There's one animal they still haven't seen, one that lives all over North America, but is a real symbol of the rugged Southwest. Plenty of misconceptions surround this infamous animal, but its deadly reputation is no myth.
If you pick up something on the ground to look at it, I want you to pay attention where you're putting your hands down near the ground, because these are real live rattlesnakes and we don't want anybody to be bit.
The Clausens aren't about to head into rattlesnake country without an expert, or better yet, two. George Oliver and Larry Dalton from the Utah Division of Wildlife know a secret about Canyonlands. Right now in mid-autumn, dozens of snakes gather at groups of rocks like this one and look for a place to spend the winter. It's like rattlesnake ground zero.
Craig, Lori, everyone, come over here. Here's a baby.
When it comes to experiencing rattlesnakes, it isn't a bad idea to start off small.
I'm going to bring him out here in the sun where you can see him.
Baby rattlesnakes shed their skin 3 or 4 times a year. Every shedding adds another segment to the rattle.
This one can just barely make a sound because it only has one movable segment.
Since rattlesnakes are cold-blooded, they regulate their own temperature by moving from shade to sunlight. George is careful not to let this little snake sit in the sun too long. And besides, while this baby is fascinating, the Clausens came here to see a full-size rattler.
Let's look around close on the ground because we're going to kneel down a little here and just make sure we don't have a snake laying hiding.
The rattlesnakes are settling in for their winter hibernation, and snake wranglers Larry Dalton and George Oliver know just where to find them.
Hey, see how George is peeking back in there? Mm-hmm. Well, you can only see so far.
Right.
But if we catch the sun on a reflective surface, like a mirror, so we'll reflect some light in there and see if we can't see something.
You see, to the right is the head. There's, see it?
Oh, my gosh. Isn't that shining light right on the head.
Yeah.
Katie found one.
Is it a rattlesnake?
Oh, it's definitely a rattlesnake.
With Katie's help, George tries to pull this one out of the rocks, but it's in too deep. They're going to have to keep looking. Snakes aren't the only residents of this rock pile. George grabs the chance to lasso one of the snake's occasional foods. It's a plateau lizard, an adult male. The iridescent blue stripe on his belly advertises that he's ready to breed.
He's not gonna hurt you.
But this lizard isn't in the mood to be on the subject of today's biology lesson.
He got away.
Everyone's so distracted that they don't notice what's lurking in the rocks. Until...
Back up. Let George get him out of there. Give room.
The rattle is the snake's first line of defense. It's his way of saying, I see you, so don't try anything.
It was out right in the sun, just in the... Did any of you get a look at it?
I got a look at it.
But Larry's not about to give up.
We don't want to miss it.
He's onto something big.
See, he's a big snake, but he just disappears under a little piece of wood.
The rattle doesn't actually contain any noisemaker. The sound comes from the individual segments banging into each other when the snake shakes its tail.
With the tongue, it collects chemical information and draws the tongue back into the mouth.
Rattlesnakes also have a sixth sense, deep pits on either side of their face that detect heat and help guide them to prey. It's a surefire way to identify a dangerous snake. But then again, if you can see the pits, you're probably way too close.
We're happy right here, I think.
Many people believe that rattlesnakes can actually jump. In truth, they can only strike about a third of their length. The Clausens are plenty far away, but it still feels a bit intimidating. It's been the perfect last animal encounter, something the Clausens could never have done on their own. Together, the Clausens take one last look at the spectacular Utah scenery. They're happy to have shared this experience as a family, but everyone has taken away something a little different.
We really did go way off the beaten path, and we're actually finding the animal in its natural environment and being able to just watch it exist like, as it does normally.
Oh, I love the camels. The camels were my favorite. That was my favorite day. Just being up so high.
I like the salamander because it was always smiling, and he seemed to like me too. I don't want it to be over because this has been really fun.
The rattlesnakes were awesome. I don't know if my friends will believe me, but I have pictures so I can show them.
We were just discussing, you know, you guys are going to carry these memories with you forever, and you'll be joking about a lot of the things that happened on this trip, and you'll always have this to carry with you.
You've been listening to an Animal Planet feature presentation.